listener production.
You are listening to episode 27 of the Howie Games Artist Series Part B featuring Mr. Jeremy Piven. Remember to check your show notes for the Ticketmaster link for Jeremy's stand-up show in Melbourne, April 2 and Sydney, April 4. On we go. You talked about you've got a lot of actors, drama in your family with your folks and being on the stage from a young age. What's the first thing you can recall that you were on stage doing, and why did it grab you, mate?
My parents threw me up on stage at 8 years old. John Cusack and myself were just kids, and we were both, we would alternate. You know, one night I would do it, one night he would do it as children. And we were doing, we were butchering Chekhov at 8 years old, and my parents were in the play. And so the way it was introduced to me is, it's just really fun. You get up there and do your thing. And then I was in this troupe with him and various people, a lot of actors that have gone on that you may know. And we were doing really cool, plays and short stories, but we were also improvising and we were having fun. And their whole motto is, you're enough. When you get up on stage, you're enough. And it gives you a lot of confidence. No matter what you do, don't second guess yourself. Don't doubt yourself, because it's very easy to do that. It's very American, I think, to have a lot of that, confidence, or maybe false confidence, whatever. But it allowed me to be very present and confident so that I could improvise at a very early age and do, a bunch of just really, cool playwrights. And so I was always doing that, thinking that every kid in the world has parents who have a theater and you get up on stage. I didn't think there was anything different about, and I just kept going. I ended up playing American football in high school at 5'9", 175 pounds. I don't know what that equates to in your numbers.
Not much.
Not much. If you pull up a picture of Lewis Hamilton and myself, exist. We're the same size. So, I'm not playing American football. I could fit into an F1, but I'm not playing American football. So in high school, I was acting, and no one, it was just weird. It was totally under the radar.
So you're an outlier. Being an actor, you're an outlier. You're not one of the cool kids at that stage.
Not at all. And so I was always doing it and having a lot of fun. And never, the great thing is, and it's a good thing to remember for people who are young out there or who have kids, if you don't put the pressure on someone, this is a means to an end, and they have, but they're still in it and they have discipline, they love it. It's going to come in the right way. And you're not going to put pressure on yourself. You're going to have fun. You're going to work hard. And you're going to keep evolving to the point where by the time I went to university at 18 years old, I had already been acting for 10 years. So, I was doing leads as a freshman when it just didn't exist, lead in Shakespeare plays and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't think there was anything special about what I did. But then I got to college and I was like, wait, why is everyone so green? Just because I'd been doing it forever. And so you just keep grinding and you think, okay, this is the way it's going to be. I'm going to blow up. And then you add another 20 years onto that before I even break through with Entourage, And if you're patient enough, you're going to get your shot, but it may be not until much later.
So when you're making your way, was there an actor where you walked onto a set? As you said, you're a professional working actor. Did you have a moment where you walked onto a set and thought, holy heck, I can't believe I'm going to be working on screen with this bloke or this girl, where you're like, oh my gosh?
Yeah, I mean, that happens all the time. And I think just, when I was auditioning for Heat with De Niro, you're sitting out there and you got one scene, and I'm going to play the doctor, and you're just running the scene and you're preparing. 1 hour goes by, 2 hours, 3 hours, and you're just sitting around with a bunch of dudes that look like you. And there was one actor that just snapped. He just cracked. He couldn't take it anymore. It was about 3.5 hours into it. And he just snapped and took the casting assistant and threw him up against the wall, you know, and just started screaming at him. And at that moment, the doors finally opened and the casting director was there and he's holding this poor kid, you know, with his feet dangling. You know, that actor has gone on to work, you know, a lot. But that's something that you can't do. And so for me, it's just about if you stay in it long enough and you don't crack, and you know, yep. you get your chance. And I walked in there and I auditioned, and Mike, the brilliant Michael Mann, like, you know, they really put you through your paces. You know, you got to really do it. And then you get there on the day. And if you hold it together and don't crack, you get to work with Robert De Niro.
And what happens and how do you keep pushing on, Jeremy? We're in Australia, so I'm going to just call you Jezza, because that's what, okay. In Australia, you'd be Jezza or Pivo. So okay. Are you okay with Jezza?
Yeah, right with absolutely. Jezza?
Okay. So, Jezza, you're going and you're working, but I'm sure for the successes, there are lots of times where you audition and for whatever reason, you don't fit the part. What is it like walking off set when you've, I haven't got the right term here, when you've tried out for a part, right? When you've done an audition and you get quite a few no's in a row, how do you deal with that in your profession?
Well, I mean, as an actor, you deal with more rejection than people do in multiple lifetimes. That's just exactly. The reality of the game. You put everything you have into it. Each audition has to be a performance where you're totally off book and you just go in there and crush it. And I remember one time auditioning, and it was for this new doctor show, and it was a comedy hybrid, blah, blah, blah. And I did my thing and they were all laughing and I was like, I got this. And then I heard that I didn't get it. And I remember I said to my agent, what's the feedback? And she goes, the feedback is you didn't get it. That's all you need to know. And I was like, okay. But man, I thought I hit it. I got lucky and they were laughing. And I bet it's because they're looking for pretty boys. And I was funny, but you know, they just want, and she goes, you have to stop making excuses. That's what you have to do. All right. You got to get after it. And I was like, all right, I will, but for me, just get some feedback on this one. She came back to me and she goes, you're right. They were looking for pretty boys. You were the funniest that they saw. And, you know, they're just going for pretty boys. And they went for a group of pretty boys and the show wasn't funny and it got canceled and fuck them. I'm a little bitter. I'm not going to be, I'm bitter. I'm bitter, but that bitterness serves me.
I've got and I didn't want to say that at the start because you never, with your guests, you want to respect them, but not be gushy, but I have two favorite television shows and one is Entourage and the other is Seinfeld. And from what I can gather, you're the only actor that has been in both those shows. 1993, you're in Seinfeld. I was watching it. You had a rude haircut because they were trying to make a pilot and you were cast in there to play George, right?
This is Michael Barr, another George.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing? Thanks for coming in.
Everything all right?
I just came from the podiatrist. Yeah, I got something wrong with my foot. I got a little gangrene. They're probably going to have to amputate.
Any questions?
Well, what are we looking at here? I mean, is this guy like a real loser?
No, not a loser.
Let's start with the second scene. You have it there?
Yeah.
Okay.
A man gave me a massage.
So?
He had his hands, you know, and he was,
He was what?
Well, he was, you know, he was touching and rubbing.
Did you have, like, you're a reasonably young man at this stage. Did you have any idea of the size and scope of what that show was?
I had never seen Seinfeld because...
You hadn't seen it?
I'd never seen it because, you have to understand, I was a stage actor from Chicago. I was in L.A. doing my first TV show. I was a series regular on the Larry Sanders Show, a legendary show.
This is very positive.
Yes, besides that, this gives me a chance to be with my boyfriend again.
You have a boyfriend?
Yes, I do. Oh. He's a writer on the Letterman Show.
That is wrong on so many levels. Now I don't.
Shandling and Seinfeld were very good friends and, you know, voted, you know, number one or number two show of the 90s. You know, people really loved that show. I was playing the head writer on that show and still had that kind of journeyman actor mentality where I was living in a pool house, like a pool boy, even though I was on a series. So I just didn't, I just kept, and you know, they were like, what are you doing? And I was, you know, in the parking lot, and Mark Hirschfeld, who cast Seinfeld, said, hey, Jeremy, would you like to audition for Seinfeld? And I'd never seen the show. And I was like, as an actor, like, yeah, of course. Never saw it. And he goes, well, you know, it's to play George, a fictional version of George. I have no idea what she's talking about. I've never seen the show. And so I had worked with Jason Alexander, and so I'd been around him. So I went in and auditioned and did an impersonation of him, having never seen the show. And they were like, oh my God, man, you must be such a big fan of the show. And I was like, yes, I am. I'd never seen it. And it benefited me because I was on set with them, and you know, they were the Beatles, but I didn't know it. And Jerry was, you know, just, they were all just really cool and fun and funny, and I had a great time. Had I really, you know, watched the show and known about the impact of it, it would have changed how maybe the interaction or whatever, but I just had a great time with them. You know, what's funny is before I started my stand-up journey, I was in Malibu looking at this Porsche, and I hear, get away from that car, you Jew. And I look up and it's Seinfeld, and being Jewish and him being Jewish, you can do that.
Yes.
And so I went up there, and you know, he was sitting with the great Sebastian Maniscalco, who's, you know, one of the great comics, and Spike, a guy that directs, you know, Coffee and Cars with comics and all that stuff. And I just sat with them, and he said, what are you doing? And at the time, I was shooting Mr. Selfridge. I said, I'm doing a period drama in London. And he said, why would you do that? That sounds awful. You know, he just thought it was like the worst idea, you know, because he loves stand-up. And he's someone who's a great example of how powerful it is to knowing your limitations. He knows he's not a brilliant actor. Larry David is a genius. He wrote Seinfeld. So he's a stand-up comic, surrounded himself with brilliant actors. And Larry David wrote this incredible sitcom, and he hung in there. He's honest, you know, that he's not some trained, brilliant actor. He's a genius stand-up and a great writer. And so after that, that's, you know, he didn't chase something else in that space. He just continued. He's a brilliant, prolific stand-up comic, and I didn't understand what he was talking about. But now, as a stand-up now, I realize, my God, it's so freeing because you write all your own material. You know, you live or die by everything you're doing. You're on that microphone in front of those people, and it's all on you, you know, and you don't have to rely on anyone else, and it's really kind of amazing and thrilling and gratifying. So now I finally get what he was talking about.
More of Jeremy in a moment. Back on episode 12 of the Artist Series, back in October 2022 in your podcast feed, we were joined by another man of many talents, the comedic genius that is Glenn Robbins, and his mate at the very end, Uncle Arthur.
Oh, how are you there? You're doing a marvellous job there, young Howie. I've got a couple of notes for you. You can improve on a couple of areas. But anyway, I used to do a little bit of comedy myself, but don't worry about that. Oh, dear. Is there a toilet around here?
That's Glenn Robbins on episode 12 of the Artist Series back in October 2022. Check it out. Let's get back to Jeremy. Back to working hard and then getting your break. At what stage of the 8 series in, was there a moment when you're out and about or you get sent the ratings or the advertising rates or whatever it is, Jez, where you understand that entourage is that moment opportunity?
You know, it's interesting because we were just before social media exploded, just before TiVo even really existed. So like, you know, in the beginning, I remember people were like, hey, can we come over and watch it on Sunday nights? And I was like, wow, you want to watch one? You know, it's like people weren't really that interested in the shows I was doing before then. I was like, this is interesting. And people would all gather on a Sunday night to watch. And I just kind of looked around So it was very organic the way it happened. I was like, oh, maybe we're on to something here. And yeah, it, you know, I think it's gone on to have this other life. You know, I think there's this whole generation of kids that watch it during the pandemic. So I've got, you know, 22-year-old kids coming up to me and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. HBO doesn't even realize, you know, I'm on tour and people are screaming out lines from the show. They miss it. There's not a lot of content out there that people are connecting with. And that's why you see people rebooting. But this is one of those shows where, like, people would be excited for a reboot because they miss it. It struck a chord with people. So I can't tell you, you know, I was lucky enough to win a bunch of awards. I was never that guy before. And so the work was being recognized. That was incredible. And so that, to me, I could feel the change.
So then how do you approach the change in life to not become what we would call a dickhead here in Australia? You're a hardworking actor that's been in all these wonderful shows, and then, as you said, your moment came, and then all of a sudden you are everything that Hollywood is, from what I would understand. You're getting paid a lot of money, you're recognisable on the street, I'm sure you're going to the best restaurants, and living the life. What's the transition like from a hardworking dude to a genuine star? A worldwide star. And how'd you handle it, mate?
You know, just hearing you say that is not the way I think or see it or saw it.
That's credit to you. Maybe that's why you didn't become a knob.
Well, thank you. I just think it's one of those things where it's like, with athletes, I don't know how they do it because they're still kids when they blow up. Mm. They probably haven't heard no since they were 13. You know, I think it's a lot tougher for them. I was a 37-year-old man. You know, these guys would be retiring when I broke through. So for me, it was really nice. Anyone who says that they wouldn't want their hard work recognized is lying. They're lying. You know, they don't care about you know, certain things. But yeah, to have it recognized is special, because I think one of the reasons why we follow and are enamored with athletes or actors is because the reality is you have to sacrifice large portions of your life to be good at it. And not everyone's willing to do that. And as we see more and more that, yes, of course, talent is a variable, but grinding and putting the hours in is where it's at. And so, you know, not everyone wants to do that. And I'm not even saying who's right or wrong. You know, I'm 200 years old and still single and have dedicated my life. You know, people are like, why are you still single? And I say, you know, I'm married to my work. And then my work decided to see other people. Good night, everyone. Thank you for coming. That is the type of hilarity that you can expect from me at the Palais and the State Theatre.
That's what we're coming to see. You mentioned rebooting the show. The world has changed in some ways for good. I can't comment on American culture because I don't live there, but in Australia, from my perspective, working in the media, you have to be so careful of what you say, which is good for many reasons, but I think we've probably overdone it in this part of the world. We've probably become over-sanitized, over-critical, overly woke, for want of a better term. Do you see, you know, it's the question you get asked in every interview, so I might as well ask it to you because it's what people want to know. Do you see Entourage potentially ever coming back? Like, I love the podcast with Doug that he does with the guys. I've really enjoyed that, and it seems to come up every second episode. But in your world, when you've, you know, when you've been Michael Jordan playing with the Chicago Bulls, the top of the tree, can you see yourself going back to that, or do you move on as an actor and as a person?
Well, we always move on. I've been putting together a movie for almost 14 years now. I bought the rights to this Arthur Miller short story. And just getting the money, you know, for a period piece that's independent I had never produced something before. So I grinded and stayed after it. And I play a tap dancer. And so every year that I heard no, I got better at tap. So then I put over a decade into tap, you know. So it's like an interesting metaphor for, like, if you keep shutting me out, I'm just going to get stronger until we finally found the money, made the film. We're going to be going and showing it at the Miami Film Festival on April 11th. We got this brilliant review in Variety, which is very, very difficult.
Congratulations, mate.
Thank you, man.
Congratulations after 14 years. That's quite an achievement.
It is, and it's the best work of my life. And that's, you know,
well done.
We're very lucky as actors. You know, legends of the sport, they have to retire unless you're Mike Tyson. And then you can just take mushrooms and fight children for some reason, which is an interesting choice. But with us, we get to just keep going and you don't really retire. So I have moved on, but at the same time, like, I really do see how much of an impact we have with people and how much they miss us. And yeah, with this, we're living in times where people are putting a lot of energy into performative gestures, trying to be seen in a certain way, ticking all the right boxes, and, you know, they're forgetting that people need to laugh. And, you know, we've been locked up, and, you know, we need a good laugh. And so for me, not to be too dramatic, I feel like I'm providing a little bit of a service. You know, when you come out and see me next week, it's my honor to make you guys laugh and forget about everything that you've been dealing with. I'm very grateful for that. And the more I can make you laugh, the better. And I'm going to give the people what they want. You know, I know they want to see Entourage, but I also want to show them who I am. So I weave it in a very clever way in terms of, like, letting you know that I do run lines with my mom. Everything I've said is Ari Gold, I've said to her face. And then I launch into a massive monologue where it's the most offensive thing you've ever seen ever. And I'm doing it in my mom's face. You know what I mean? I can't do it for you right now. You're gonna have to come to the Palais or the State
Theater.
There you go. But you know, that's selfishly my way of saying, hey, I come from a good family of artists. You may think of me, you're going to leave going, I think I understand a little bit of who Jeremy is, as opposed to, you know, those that go, oh, he's Ari Gold. He's an agent that's a douchebag, reactive, type A, rich, you know, and all of these preconceived notions, because we don't, listen, this is a long form, I love long form interviews, because you get a sense of who someone is, as opposed to a soundbite, or going, oh yeah, I know who he is. He's that guy, you know. And so, you know, you talk about, can I go back? It's not even going back. It's more like just kind of, it's something that it would be an honor, because we really struck a chord. It was very specific. People love watching it. It's a world that if we were to navigate it now, I think it'd be very a fertile ground to explore what a guy like Ari, how he would navigate the woke culture. You know, Lloyd could be his politically correct consultant, you know. Ari, you can't say that. You know, you're not a friend to the gay community. I am a friend of the gay community, and you're using the wrong pronouns. What do you mean by that? What is that? You know, you got to use the right pronouns. Your pronoun is has and been, because you're a fucking has been. I mean, like, who knows? Like, you know, it could just be, and he could get canceled. I mean, who knows? It could be very fun. Then he could be off the grid. Then they have to go get him and bring him back. I mean, you know, there's so many fun possibilities to explore.
Final question I have for you, mate. We always finish this way, and it's been a privilege to chat with you. You need to go and see Jezza in Melbourne, April 2, or in Sydney, April 4. The links are in the show notes, so you can go and see this man. Hopefully on front row, because I'd love to see him in action. We are privileged to have a lot of kids and young adults listen to this show, Jeremy, and they may be on the way to acting class or cricket training or the science fair or want to become a plumber or a lawyer. You've had a lot of success in your career, and you've explained that you were far from just exploding on the scene. It took you a long time. What advice would you give to those young inquiring minds that want to achieve some success in the field that they love and passionate about? And you're obviously very passionate about what you do, mate.
Yeah, I would say we're living in times where people compare themselves to other people a lot. And I just feel like if you cannot do that, if you cannot be affected by anything that people say, any, you know, negative stuff really impacts people. If you have a passion for something, stay after it. Don't put any pressure on yourself. Stay with it. Something's going to come of it. And the only way you can go wrong is if you let your inner life be affected by the outer world. Just kind of just turn the volume down on all that and stay after it.
Mate, I love it. I appreciate your time. Good luck with the stand-up, not that you need it. Yeah.
Listen, come to my show. If you want to heckle, whatever, just let it fly. But just know that don't bring a butter knife to a tank fight because I will destroy you. I'm a professional.
I'm not a heckler, mate. I'm about spreading the love, mate. Thanks for joining me on the Howie Games. Enjoy Adelaide. Get some sleep and travel well. And it was an absolute privilege to have a chat with you, Jeremy.
Thank you, Howie. I appreciate it, man. Take care, buddy.
There's a dude, just with no airs and graces, a star who doesn't act like a star. Good luck to Jeremy with everything he's got cooking moving forward. Hope you get to see his stand-up show. Next up on the Howie Games, former Socceroos skipper Mila Jednak, and the Artist Series will soon feature Jack McCoy and Mark Seymour. That is coming soon. Until then, peace and love.